Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. It is a Wednesday and thus I am very excited and pleased that I can now turn to J.R. Jackson, who's gonna be joining me throughout the
hour. Guess what today is?
What?
It's J.R. Wednesday.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say it was calling out Cenk Uygur Day, because that's gonna happen later
on. That definitely happens. Yeah. And also, you know what happens on J.R. Wednesday?
What?
Big things happen, news drops. I'm telling you, it's Wednesday, bro. This is beginning to be a staple, bro.
He's not wrong. I mean, as longtime viewers of the show know, we always say it's gonna be a big show. 80 to 95% of the time we're lying. But this time, it's pretty good,
it's okay? Time,
and so there we are alluding to the Lev Parnas documents bombshell. It's really one of the craziest stories. I mean, this is some House of Cards stuff. And so we're gonna have that a little bit later on. So you have to stick around, we're gonna get to that. Also, if you've been feeling a little bit done with politics the past few days, as I have, I know many people online are like, this is just the worst. Well, you're right, but at the end of the show, we're gonna have a little bit of fun. Mm-hmm. What's going on with dishwashers, everybody? The president's gonna try to break it down at a rally, so that should be a lot of fun. And we also have a congressional candidate who's gonna be joining us just a little bit. So lots to get to, but let's start off with a little bit of a recap of one of the big events of last night. At the Democratic debate last night, we all knew that there was going to be a question about the supposed comments from Bernie Sanders to Elizabeth Warren a year ago. And we speculated on the show, what are some ways that this situation could be diffused? What are some ways that it might play out? And all of our predictions proved sort of naive, I guess. And it was way, way worse than we would have expected. Now, look, we're gonna give commentary, JR and myself, on this. But I wanna play the back and forth from last night's debate that is most important. And we're gonna add a little bit of the commentary from Morning Joe this morning. Now, I don't normally think of Joe or Mika as big Sanders fans. Mm-hmm. But here, Mika speaks in defense of Sanders in a pretty effective way, as you'll see.
Saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I am completely confused as to why it turned from Bernie Sanders saying I didn't say it to Elizabeth Warren being asked, what did you think when he said it? He says he didn't say it. So you turn to Elizabeth Warren and say, did he say it?
Bizarre.
That's the issue.
That was bizarre.
I mean, it's bizarre.
It was.
What the heck happened there? Are they listening? Because you got to listen when you do a debate.
Yeah.
And then take the question to the next candidate.
You just missed.
It was a miss.
You were waiting to go.
But
did
this
he
is
say
the story.
It was a miss.
By the way, I've had conversations, private conversations, taken to the press and totally manipulated for the benefit of the person who was sharing the story. This happens all the time. It's clear there's a misunderstanding, or Elizabeth Warren is focused on something that was said. And Bernie Sanders is not going to be someone who says, I don't think a woman could win. That's just stupid.
Right. It would not be smart.
You just didn't say that.
Also, Bernie went to her in 2015. And said, hey, I think you can win. I think you should run for president.
This is one more issue to bring up.
This is such small ball.
So this is weird. It almost feels like Morning Joe this morning was Joe and Mika doing like a dramatic reading of Anna and I talking about this story on yesterday's main show.
With a lot less yelling.
Yeah.
So you know, what happened was they said she should have listened. The moderator should have listened when he said something. You're supposed to respond to the way the person answered the question. But she has been listening. That's the way that they're supposed to frame it. This was put into place. Moderators aren't rogue. We always talk about how I can't believe the moderator asked that question and didn't give them that much time. And oh my God, I can't believe they ignored Andrew Yang. Oh, I can't believe they did this. No, that is what they're supposed to do. When moderators are doing their reading, they're not going, so Senator Sanders and talking straight to him. They're going, Senator Sanders, because it was these questions are prepared and you're supposed to ask them a certain way and supposed to frame them a certain way because that's just the way that our debates have become. So this is not her going rogue. This is not her not believing him. This is what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, and well, yes, supposed to do from the point of view of the organization that employs them and was running the debate.
Right.
From, I would say what they were supposed to do, I guess, because I still like, I guess I'm one of the last people, but I think that like journalism is great and I would like some of it. you're not supposed, like if there is a disagreement between two things that were said, and there is a statement from one individual that says it went one way and another that it went this way, and neither of them are known liars, there's no outside contextual information that makes clear that one of them is lying, then you as the moderator do not get to simply say, I have now decided what is reality and I hand it down to you.
Right.
And that's what she did. It made it seem as if it was like that was the exact moment that that moderator wanted effectively. Or like she wanted to get him on the record denying it and then she would run the tape of him playing it. But there was no new information. You simply, everybody laughed. They laughed. It was such a joke. Like, are you in kidding me? Effectively was the, that was the mood in the air there.
Well, and even like you said, there was a group in the audience or the audience in general laughed at that because it was noticeable about how that was twisted. This audience also the same audience that cheered and applauded. It was one of the big applause lines when Elizabeth Warren talked about how no woman on this stage has ever lost a race, a campaign at all. So there was support for Elizabeth Warren and our other female candidate, now I'm blanking on Amy Klobuchar, in the audience.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were going, ooh, I can't believe she did that. They generally would support her. So even in that moment, when this moderator actually went harder for Elizabeth Warren on this back and forth of who's he said, she said, they were like, wow.
Yeah,
that was a little weird.
Yeah, and like, I don't watch Morning Joe a lot, but Mika is just being reasonable. Like, if something that is, I think objectively hard to imagine happening is stated, then evidence needs to be provided. We learned nothing new last night. Elizabeth Warren didn't go on the record as saying he said exactly this.
Yeah.
The question wasn't, did he say no woman could ever win the presidency? Now go on the record saying he said that or not. There was nothing like that. There was just the assumption that clearly he is lying. He said what we want him to say in private to make him look bad, the way we are predisposed to believe he is. Mm-hmm. That's all it was. It was such a deeply disappointing moment on so many different levels.
Well, you know what? The bad part is it's gotten so far. You guys, we've talked about many times how media is pushing and it has a certain level of bias against Bernie for whatever reason at different times. Well, we know some of the reasons. But it's gotten so blatant that even folks who didn't want to admit it are like, you can no longer just say, yeah, you know, they're just giving the other side of the story. They're giving the other opposition to give their voice. It's gotten so blatant that even folks who don't want to admit it have to.
Yeah. Now, I've been interested in the sort of fallout from this. And so there's a couple quick things I want to tell you about that. I find it interesting, just purely as political entertainment, to always look at people's like winners and losers from the debates.
Right.
Like I go to Crystal Lizza to learn, you know, what's gonna happen. But anyway, no, I saw one thing that I feel like it was written before the debate rather than after the debate. So Vox, which I occasionally go to for their like straight reporting or whatever, they had their winners and losers, which they always have. And they had winner Bernie Sanders, to their credit. They labeled him a winner, so that's good. I would not have expected that. But look at one of the reasons they said he was a winner. It was, there were several high points. He and Warren elegantly diffused their conflict about comments Sanders supposedly made about female presidential candidates in 2018. What?
I didn't think they did.
What? I mean, I don't care if you support Bernie or Warren on this. I don't think anybody's like, elegantly done. What do you mean it was diffused? It was way worse last night than it was beforehand.
Especially with the post-debate non-handshake.
Exactly, exactly.
Around the world.
Well, why don't we turn to that very briefly? Because you know a lot of people are really obsessed about it. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life thinking about it, but just very briefly. So Tom Steyer was there. You might have seen. They come together. They have a few words. We don't know what they were. There's an attempt at the handshake. She denies it. So Tom Steyer was standing right there, wishing he was standing literally anywhere else in the universe. So he was asked by Anderson Cooper what happened. He said, they were talking about getting together or something. I really didn't listen. What were you wondering what was on TV later that night? You were standing with two presidential candidates. They were talking. Your ears were unclogged. What do you mean you don't know? You know what was said, Tom Steyer.
It's the right thing to do, though.
If I was Tom Steyer, reveal it?
Yeah, if I was Tom Steyer, I'd be like, yeah, I walked up and then you guys didn't rerun the tape. I had my fingers in my ears.
Exactly. I was just humming to myself. And so we also have Faiz Shakir, Sanders' campaign manager, said she came to raise a concern. And he said, let's talk about that later. Representatives for the Warren campaign declined to comment. I guess he would know because he would have talked to Bernie about it. But if she were to raise a concern and Bernie went to shake her hand, like, you have to know that people are watching you on the stage. Like, everything physically that you do, like, you know, is going to be dissected. It was like, I'm not one of those people who's like trying to read into her psychology and imply that I know everything that she's ever thought about the world. But you know that people are watching and they're going to see that you rejected the handshake.
Yeah, either you're okay with people seeing that and it becoming a thing from Elizabeth Warren's point of view, or you didn't realize that that's going to be scrutinized the way you said, of course, everyone should know it should be scrutinized. And if you don't know that everything you do as one of the top presidential candidates on the Democratic side is going to be scrutinized, then you're miscalculating a lot.
Yeah.
How do you not know that yet?
Yeah,
so somewhere there was miscalculation in knowing the status you've got or realizing what you've got and you're trying to make sure it's seen.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we got a candidate who's going to be joining us. Stick around after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're joined now on the show by a congressional candidate for Texas's 31st district, Donna Imam. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, a little bit sick, but I'm glad to be talking to you. And I'm excited to learn about the district and about the race. So thank you again for joining us today. We really do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So before we launch into the race, the nature of the race and all of that, tell us a little bit about the district and its people. Who are you out there campaigning for?
So the district is Williamson County and Bell County, and this is north of Austin, Texas. In fact, a significant portion of Austin is in Texas's 31st district. Now, what happened is over the last 5 years, Austin grew in a massive amount and it pushed people into the suburbs. And so Williamson County, just from the last cycle, so November of 2018, has gotten 50,000 more people into just one of the two counties. Now, Williamson County, it's very suburbs, a lot of suburbia, but then it gets really rural. Then you get into Bell County, and Bell County has Killeen and Temple as the biggest cities. The interesting thing that people need to know is Killeen is home to the largest armored vehicle military base in the entire country. We have more veterans per square mile in Texas's 31st district than any other district in Texas.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. I lived in Austin for a number of years, so I'm at least a little bit familiar with that area north of it. So when you're out there campaigning, you've got some parts of Austin with their whole keeping it weird college population, all that. And then this huge base of vets. So tell me about, you know, crafting a platform for those different demographics that might not necessarily share a lot, at least on the surface.
It seems that way on the surface, that they don't share a lot in common, but the fact is they do. So what I did is I quit my job early in 2019 and I went across the district to talk to every single person that would talk back to us in every precinct and every city. And what we found is that people in the military who are veterans are having major healthcare challenges in terms of the way that they get care and the ability to get care and when they can get care, where they have to take time off the entire day. They go to a VA area or a VA clinic and they are unable to get the care that they've come for, even though they've taken the whole day off. So the healthcare challenge, it doesn't matter whether you work for a high-tech company like Amazon or whether you work for the military or you're retired military or you've exited the military, you have similar challenges. Look, if you are in between jobs and you have a really great job, you still don't have health insurance, and coming up with $1,500 to $2,000 a month to pay your family's premiums is difficult, whether you're in the military, you've exited the military, or you work for a big company. So despite what people think, our commonalities and the challenges that we face are actually very similar than they are different.
Hi, Donna. It's JR. I ask this of a lot of candidates. As you've been canvassing, especially since you just mentioned how you're talking to so many people from different backgrounds, but then they have the same potential, connection to the issues, what kind of pushback have you got, and have you had to explain it in this much detail to a lot of people, or have you found that they were already on this track and they just needed someone to voice what they've been thinking? Like, I can't believe someone's actually saying what I've been thinking. Have you been convincing, or has it been just like a common conversation you've had?
It's been absolutely convincing, and I'll tell you what. When I go up to Bell County and I'm talking in front of large veterans groups, for example, you don't get in front of a group of people that are all, you know, Democrats, okay? There's Democrats, there's Republicans, and there are independents. And what the biggest misconception among people is that somehow independents are centrist. They're not. So all I get are people who are completely accepting of the message. But here's the thing. When we talk to people who might be on the other side or even Republicans, the first question I ask them is, do you have health care? What about your kids? How are you going to pay for trade school or college or community college? And the conversation switches around in a second because they're like, okay, what's your solution for this? And I'm like, well, this is what's going to single payer healthcare for all. Medicare for all is going to reduce the cost of healthcare for every single person in this country. Number one. Number two, you're going to have coverage no matter what. So I'll give you an example. I came across a veteran who has coverage, okay, retired veteran. And he started talking to me about his family. And I said, what about your daughter? And he was like, well, my daughter works in a restaurant. And I'm like, well, does she have health insurance? No. So guess what? It doesn't matter which side of the aisle you are on. When you talk about healthcare, education, high-wage jobs, and the challenges that people are facing, it brings people together. Yeah. And when you break it down into terms that's going to impact their lives, they get it. And they come on board. And after I've had a conversation with them, even people on the other side who start out the conversation with how you're going to pay for it are like, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that we were overpaying for healthcare. I didn't know that we paid $3.65 trillion in 2018 when every single study out there says you should be paying somewhere between $2 and $3.5 trillion. I didn't know that. I can get on board with your plan, Donna. Yeah. That's the reception that I'm getting.
And as in a good number of cases of the candidates that we talked to, you are in an at least semi-crowded field. There's a number of other Democrats running this primary. What do you believe sets yourself apart from the other Democrats?
Well, first of all, I'm a computer engineer. I'm an average person that gets up in the morning and goes to work. And this is what happened in my career early on. I saw every single manufacturing worker in my company get laid off. Some of them never worked a day in their life, and none of them had job retraining options. In the last 5 years, I ran a nonprofit, and we provide education and training completely free. We raise tens of thousands of dollars. And what I realized is that we need to do more. We have major structural changes that we need to make in our country, and that's why I'm running. And the thing that really sets me apart is that I'm an individual that has sat down with people in my community and filled out their naturalization papers. I've done DACA applications for people. When I talk about immigration, I can tell you what the challenges are. When you're applying, I can tell you what the challenges are on the other side. I can go deep and I can go wide on these issues and tell you, because like I said, I've applied and I've put it in and I've sat on the USCIS website seeing how much long it takes to come back. So when I talk about issues, I can talk with depth. That's what sets me apart. And if you go and look at the solutions that I'm running on, these are solutions that we need to be talking about, and they're going to have actual impact that's going to impact every single person in the United States. Lastly, we have localized these issues. Look, my whole district has lots of suburbia. In Williamson County, you have a lot of families that actually have household incomes that are in six figures. But then you have all this rural vast area. And most of your viewers might have heard, but Texas has the most number of uninsured people, and rural hospitals, rural clinics are shutting down at a rate that's devastating to people in rural areas of my district. For example, if you need to go to Killeen or Temple or Harker Heights or Nolanville, they have challenges hiring the best teachers. They have challenges finding good mental health care professionals. We have a huge district that's full of military professionals and ex-military and retired military that are, dealing with challenges like PTSD and mental health challenges. And then their family is having to deal with folks coming back that have been in the military, been deployed, six times, seven times, eight times. And even if you have great health insurance, even if you work for Google and you pick up the phone and you try to find a really good mental health counselor, in Austin, Texas, I'm not even talking about the rural parts of my district, you're going to be on hold for 2 months, 3 months to find someone decent. I'm talking about solutions about getting more mental health care professionals and physicians into the system. If we really want to lower the cost of health care and we want to accelerate Medicare for all for every single person, we need to know the problem is that we don't even have enough primary care physicians in our country. We don't have enough mental health care professionals. We don't have enough nurses, and we need to attack that problem so that we can have a real solution for every single person across the district.
Well, Donna, ma'am, we want to thank you again for joining us on the show. Where can people find out more about your candidacy?
VoteForDonna.com. That's VoteForDonna.com. And please donate, because we're running a grassroots campaign. Volunteer if you can't donate. Every single dollar counts, and every single moment that you give us count. We're going to win this. We're going to flip Texas 31, and we're going to bring Texas 31 and put a bold voice for working people and healthcare solutions in Congress for you.
Okay, well, thank you again. And for those of you at home, we're going to take a short break, but come back. A gigantic story to break down after this. Good timing there. So look, I want to turn now to one of the craziest stories I've seen in some time. And it involves Lev Parnas and some of the other extended ring of what are being referred to by the news as like Trump's and Giuliani's associates. But really, like, I feel like we're obligated to call them henchmen now. Maybe goons. At the very least, thugs, right?
Foot soldiers.
Foot soldiers, I guess. And it's because what they were getting up to with Rudy Giuliani in Ukraine, in particular in relation to US Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, is like something out of a movie, honestly. Like some sort of Scorsese thing. And so take a look at this. We're gonna give you a little bit of an overview and then dive into some of what has been revealed, because as we get closer to the Senate trial, now Lev Parnas' documents are being revealed. These documents, which include Parnas' handwritten notes, copies of text messages and other correspondence, reveal some new information, including that Giuliani claimed to be acting with President Trump's knowledge and consent in his communications with the Ukrainian government, to the extent that Trump can be said to have knowledge of something. He apparently was working on his behalf. But what was most amazing is a set of documents Effectively, Parnas received from a person named Robert Hyde, a Republican congressional candidate, which is a great fact, from my home state of Connecticut. Hyde texted Parnas that he had people tracking Marie Yovanovitch's movements closely in Ukraine. He claimed he could tell whether her phone and computer were off, and he wrote, quote, "If you want her out, they need to make contact with security forces." So we're gonna add way more context to that. But in effect, what you need to know is, Donald Trump apparently sent Rudy Giuliani, or at least Rudy Giuliani is claiming that this is what happened, sent him to Ukraine, and he got in touch with people like Lev Parnas and others, who then began spying on a US official and perhaps even threatening to assassinate that US official. That seems crazy. It seems like conspiracy theory stuff, but it's being laid out by the people that Giuliani was working with.
It's, as you said, it's almost hard to believe, except that it's right there in front of us. Uh-huh. It's not even like someone typed it up or wrote an email and, oh my God, I can't believe you guys hacked this. It was submitted by Lev Parnas as an attorney, handwritten notes with letterheads at the top, and which, by the way, corroborates many other things that come together. This isn't just a one piece of information. This is a litany of things that came forward today.
So let's jump into some of what was revealed. There's a lot of documents. We obviously can't go through all of them, but here are a few of the standouts. So one was a handwritten note on a Ritz-Carlton napkin, I think, get Zelensky to announce that the Biden case will be investigated. That's direct. That's just laying it out there. That's obviously the biggest thing that they wanted. And I will reiterate, as I always do, this was not about an investigation of Biden. It was about the announcement of an investigation into Biden. Now, they didn't care or need to care what actually turned up or didn't get turned up. They wanted the media to cover that Biden was being investigated.
Now, as this happens, I want people in general, and if you read it on your own, which you should, go through all the things that we previously knew and how it actually connects. So if you want to say, oh yeah, Lev Parnas decided to say you wanted to go ahead and get Zelensky to announce an investigation into the Bidens, who else has been saying that? Like, you know, where's the connection? You can keep saying, yeah, Lev didn't know Giuliani, or he only kind of knew Giuliani, and Lev had no idea who Donald Trump was at all. Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani were pushing this the entire time, and now the entire Republican Party is pushing this. So the only way this can be separate from them is that Lev Parnas, for some reason, decided to go after Rudy, not go after Joe Biden and his son in Ukraine, based on what
independently
and for who? What benefit would he have?
I don't know. I don't know. But we do have more documents. I know that. So let's turn to that. One, we have a message from Zelensky, apparently, or sorry, this is from Ukraine's prosecutor general to Lev Parnas, saying it's just that if you don't make a decision about Madame, you are bringing into question all of my allegations, including about B. So effectively, what that is getting into, when you look at the context of other messages, if they don't take out Marie Yovanovitch, then it calls into question the allegations that will be made against B, who we believe to be Joe Biden, although possibly it's Cardi. I don't know. But so there, it's, you want a quid pro quo. This isn't just, hey, we're sending our thug there to try to get them to do something. It's, they know it, and they have something they want, and they're openly negotiating with our henchmen to achieve our goals.
And again, I know we went through hours and hours of testimony and anger and fights and Republicans trying to deflect from it, but when Marie Yovanovitch was testifying and talking about what went down, and other people within the department were saying, oh man, I can't believe this is about to happen to you, this all makes sense. This is not, again, it's not just another aspect that's just getting thrown out there. She was pushed out for no real reason other than that she was getting in the way. And this was openly and explicitly said.
Yeah. And if you are like a caricature of a mob henchman, what do you do when someone gets in the way? You at the very least make threats against them and possibly carry through on those. And that's where we turn now. This is gonna get progressively darker and darker. So here you have again, Ukrainian Prosecutor General Lutsenko sending messages to Parnas, then responds. Here's four messages. So Lutsenko, my Zlochevsky matter is progressing well. There is testimony about transfers to B again, either Biden or Cardi. And here you can't even get rid of one female fool. And he puts a little like sad face emoji. That's cute. So then Parnas responds, she's not a simple fool, trust me, but she's not getting away.
My gosh.
I mean, maybe something is lost in translation, like something that shows that they're not talking about killing an ambassador. But that's the way you talk about someone that you're hunting down.
You didn't even get after the female fool. It's too explicit.
Yeah. So then we have Robert Hyde getting involved. So he's perhaps Connecticut's next Republican congressman. So he said similarly about Yovanovitch, Wow, can't believe Trump hasn't fired this bee. I'll get right in that. Well, he can't fire her since he has no authority over her. So what does that exactly mean? But anyway, then even darker. So now this gets into the surveillance of Marie Yovanovitch. So we have Robert Hyde saying they're moving her tomorrow. So they're apparently watching her and her security detail. They're moving her. The guys over there asked me what I would like to do and what is in it for them. What is this? This is bad dialogue in a screenplay?
What's in it for
them? I've got guys over there and they want to know what they should do and what's in it for them. When they move her, when her security has her out in public, what should be done and what's in it for them?
Again, the high level of coordination going along this, again, and hopefully we'll get John Bolton to tell the truth if he ever testifies. He talked about how he didn't want to get involved with this, what he called a drug deal that Rudy Giuliani and them were pulling off because it has it has characteristics of this type of nefarious activity.
I mean, the comparison to a drug deal was supposed to be like, oh, it's not immediately clear on the surface how this is illegal, so I'm going to pretend that it's this thing, which is clearly illegal. A drug deal, that would be quaint in comparison to what this really looks like. Let's move on. Wake up, Yankees man. I don't know what that means. And the guy who sent that is the American in the conversation. She's talked to three people, her phone is off, computer is off. So how does Robert Hyde, by the way, we're not gonna go into it, but you can look at his Instagram account. He's in with a whole bunch of Republican congressmen. Like this is not some, he's obviously a weirdo, but he's a connected weirdo to all of them. He apparently knows when a US ambassador's phone and computer are off and is watching her and her security detail. So let's jump into more. He goes on, they are willing to help if you would like a price. Guess you can do anything in the Ukraine with money, what I was told. To which Parnas replied, lol. Guess you can do anything in the Ukraine with money. Lol.
Well, you know, considering again, Trump was
You can do anything what exactly?
Trump was trying to eliminate corruption in the Ukraine because it's widely known how much corruption is happening. Or it's widely known the level of corruption that happened in Ukraine. He was trying to get in on it.
Look, so I didn't read the end of that. I got sidetracked by the fact that they were laughing about assassinating ambassador. Sorry, that's my bad. The next day, Hyde reported back that Yovanovitch would not be moved and that his contacts were asking, what is the next step? He added, if you want her out, they need to make contact with security forces. So if you want her out, they need to talk to the security forces. I don't know if they're implying that they have an in with the security forces or they were going to attempt to manipulate the security forces into taking her into public. But apparently she was in a place that his guys over there couldn't reach her and they needed to either have a mole or they needed to get her out so that she could be taken out.
It's outrageous, man. It's you can't make it up. And if you made it up, they would tell you that fake news, you're lying, can't believe you're making up these things that no good patriotic American would ever do.
Yeah, okay, there's more, and I don't care how long it takes. There's more.
It's necessary.
So let's go to this. So this is between Robert Hyde and Parnas. Hey, brother, do we stand down or you still need intel? Be safe. Do we stand down from what? So you're not James Bond, what op are you on that you have to stand down from? She had visitors, so they're still watching her. It's confirmed we have a person inside. Hey, broski, tell me what we are doing. What's the next step? Pick a lane. Are you a mobster or are you a douche frat boy? Honestly, you're mixing it all up.
It's a new
Parnas
version.
Didn't reply for 2 months. Perhaps because some lingering shadow of a shred of his like integrity said, hey, this could come out someday.
Yeah.
So he didn't respond for a bit.
That was just the self-preservation. Like this is these guys are dumb.
And so look, as all of this came out, Parnas's lawyers have now said, we completely categorically deny that Lev was involved in any activities with Hyde to surveil the ambassador and try to harm the ambassador. We believe Mr. Hyde's activities to be a reflection of his dubious mental state. I hear ya. There's some dubiousness in there. But the paper trail there is pretty clear. He was, by the way, Parnas was the guy who for like 2 months now has been enthusiastic about these things coming out.
Absolutely.
He thought this was going to vindicate him. And so, and here's the thing too. So look, Lev Parnas and Hyde, that's the second ring out from Trump. The first ring is Rudy Giuliani. He's the guy that apparently brought these people in. Remember, Parnas gave a ton of money to Trump and all that. Yep. And so you could say, well, you know, Trump, he doesn't know anything about that, even though he's met multiple times with Parnas and all of that. But Rudy Giuliani says that he was out there doing all this stuff, gathering this ring of henchmen on the knowledge and consent of the president. You can even see right here, this is one of the documents that was released, was a letter saying with his knowledge and consent. And maybe Rudy Giuliani is lying or exaggerating, but have you heard Trump say that Giuliani is a liar or that he's exaggerating? Right now, Trump has done nothing to distance himself from Giuliani and his pack of apparent wannabe assassins.
I've heard Rudy Giuliani say if he gets thrown under the bus that he's got some information on Trump though.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah, maybe it was these documents. He's gonna bring them all down. Now, one good thing from this, and this is where we'll close, is on a day like this, when the news is so obviously beyond the pale, finally, there's something that cuts through the normal partisan split in the media and everything. And look, Fox has been willing to defend Trump, but at a certain point, you have to take this stuff seriously if he is potentially okay with an ambassador being assassinated. And so I want to thank Parker Malloy for letting us know that, of course, Fox and Friends was talking about this in their segment. Griff meets Griff, the bulldog in Iowa. They didn't talk about this. They didn't talk about the president's personal lawyer being affiliated with a wannabe assassin.
Not at all.
They talked about a bulldog. And I get it. I have to stop myself from doing dog stories every day on the show. But there's news we gotta get to, broski.
It's the news.
What are you gonna do?
There's zero room left to deny. That there was a high level of corruption and coordination going on on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. On so many different levels. This is all we've gotten to was just the Yovanovitch part. Mm-hmm. It was much more.
Yeah. Yeah. If only there was a long-standing group of Americans who believe that high-profile American politicians have been secretly rubbing out their opponents for literally decades. Oh, you guys like Trump now? You're okay with the whole threats against the ambassador? Okay, I am really interested to see where this goes, okay? Mm-hmm. And my expectations are low-ski. Okay, we're gonna go. We got more to get to after this. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I wanted to just do a brief aside. Often at the very end of the show, when many of you might have dropped off, I ask you to do me a solid, and that is to rate and review the podcast. I know many of you are watching this live on our linear platforms, or if you're a member, you could be watching it live there too. We also release an audio podcast. For years and years before I started working for TYT, that's actually how I consumed our content, was through the podcast. So we want to make sure that we always have that available for you. But the best way for more people to discover that podcast and start to be a part of the community, the Damage Report community, is for you to rate and review that podcast. And so when people do that, I want to give them a little shout out. And so I'm going to briefly do that. I saw one review by Steph Dunn 1207 who said, I've been listening to the Damage Report almost daily for the past few months. The host, John Arola, gives a refreshing view of American politics and other important topics. It's great to have someone who seems to feel the same way I do about inaction on climate change, given a platform through this podcast and show. I recommend giving it a listen. Thanks, John. Well, thanks you, Steph Dunn. And SS Whiff said, progressive, intelligent, funny, what's not to love? And what's not to love about that review?
Awesome.
It only takes a minute. And the way that podcast hosting works, that's how people discover it. They push it out when it gets more ratings and reviews. So if you could do that, I would certainly appreciate that. Thank you in advance.
He used to take podcasts in all the time, and look where he's become. You could be the next John Otto.
Exactly. You could get as deathly ill as I do by consuming this podcast on a daily basis. Okay, we're going to take one last short break, but stick around. We got some fun on the other side. today, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats formally voted on the impeachment managers, moving us one step closer to the Senate trial of Donald Trump. Last night was the Democratic debate. So these are big, important political times. How did Donald Trump spend last night with all of this on his plate? He spent it complaining about how he can't make the State of the Union about plumbing.
But I say leave it. It's so inelegant to talk about it, right? Right? Isn't it inelegant? I'm talking about dishwashers. Wait till you hear the next one. I'm talking about refrigerators. Probably won't in the State of the Union. I'll leave it out because I want to get praised for making it. You cannot make a brilliant speech where they say that was such an incredible, elegant speech if I'm talking about dishwashers, sinks, toilets, light bulbs.
Hey, look, he can remember multiple appliances. Look, this doesn't matter, but come on.
What's he talking
come
about?
Come on.
What's he talking about?
Do you really want to know what he's talking about?
I remember the whole water got more. Swirling thing, but I don't know what he's talking about.
It's like a seed was planted in his brain, and the seed was not enough water comes out. And it has just grown throughout his entire brain, and all he can think about is how pipes don't let enough water out anymore. And so, look, I want to give him a chance to make his case. So here he is.
But sinks, toilets, and showers, you don't get any water. They put restrictors on, and now they made them permanent. People used to take them out. They put restrictors on. Try going and buying a new faucet. You turn it on, no water comes out, right? We won't talk about toilets, but you know that's a 10, 15. But we don't talk about that. Because I've said this three or four times, the only subject they ever talk about is toilets, so I don't mention it. But how about the shower? You go into a shower, and I have this beautiful head of hair. I need a lot of water. Oh, yeah. And you go into the shower, right? You turn on the water, drip, drip, drip. I call the guy, is something wrong with this? No, sir, it's just the restrictor. So you're in there five times longer than you're supposed to be. You use probably more water, and it's a very unpleasant experience, right? So we're getting rid of the restrictors. You're gonna have full shower flow. Full sink. Did you ever go to the faucet? You turn on the faucet to wash your hands, and it turns on so easy. It's like this, you know, because there's zero pressure behind it, no water. You go like that, the thing flips on and whoa.
The Trump movement is about people who've been left behind. For decades, Democrats and Republicans wouldn't talk about how you do dink, dink, dink. And now finally, we have someone who will speak for these Americans. These are not problems that I can associate with. I think he lived in one of his buildings and the plumbing is bad. I think that's what this entire story is. And he has never been able to get past it. And
his people have been reduced to be detached so far from any agenda or reality for actual problems in the country that this is what they can now talk about. Make up a cartoonish situation and somehow they're sitting there listening to it and he's saying, you've seen it. And they go, yeah, I've seen it.
Do the one about water.
He's like, yeah, totally. Tom and Jerry totally ran across my kitchen and Tom keeps running his head into the mouse hole. Mm. What are we talking about? That doesn't make any sense. This is a cartoon scenario and he poses it to you and you somehow go, yeah, that makes sense. When I get in my shower, it goes drip, drip, drip. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
What are you talking about? No. Is this the comic relief section of the rally? But like,
no, that's the whole rally.
Is it announced that way? He's like, fine.
Have you been to a comedian?
I get if you want to joke every once in a while. I get if a politician want to dance because dancing has nothing to do with policy. Mm-hmm. I get it. But at least they go, hey, this is my song. And start dancing, not saying, this is policy, you guys, me dancing.
He has bits, and they want to go and see if he'll do the pipe bit or the toilet bit. Or we don't have the video, but he was like, you have to run your dishwasher 15 times. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's the president of the United States, most powerful person in the world. He's pretending that he has to run his dishwasher 15 times. Talking about, like, this is an example of like overregulation. Like, You know when you'll like you'll get in your car and you'll drive and like you'll go into a tunnel in a mountain, but it's just painted on there, so your car crashes and it was a coyote that painted it there. And like 30% of the country is like, that happens to me. And we look, Skip, our stage manager, he brought up a good point. If you wanted to talk about water regulations and what the government can do on pipes and water, like talk about the fact that many rural Americans, their water is flammable because of fracking.
Yep.
Talk about how much of our water in many places around the country goes through pipes that leach lead into the water. These are actual conversations we can have based in fact. But instead, he talks about how his fans take poops that are too difficult to flush. That is what the most powerful person in the world talks about.
Ironically, when you bring up the actual things, they'll say fake news, or I can't. It's a Democrat that's running that district. That's the only defense, and there's no basis behind that either.
Yeah.
So reality-based, they come up with randomness. When it's randomness, they're like, oh, that's perfectly fine. There's a facts that you're speaking
to me. Yeah, yeah. Wake me up in a year, okay? Anyway, thank you for joining us for that, having a little bit of fun to close out the hour. Great to have you here,
JR. It was stressful.
I know. That's the best, that's the only kind of fun we have, is fun that brings you a little bit closer to death. But anyway, thank you for joining us. We got a lot planned for the rest of the week. Brett is gonna be joining me on Friday, which is always a good time. We got great guests tomorrow. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.